Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello and welcome to the Intelligent Design the Future podcast. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting from beautiful and sunny Austin, Texas, with Dr. Charles Garner, professor of chemistry and biochemistry at Baylor University, who also served as an expert during the Texas State Board of Education hearings back in January of 2009. So, Dr. Garner, thanks so much for being willing to be on the Idea of the Future podcast with us.
Oh, you're welcome, Casey.
Well, what I wanted to talk to you about specifically right now was actually your area of expertise, which is chemistry, and how that pertains to questions about the origin of life, specifically pertaining to the issue of the origin of homochirality. And if you're already lost and you're listening to this, don't worry, Dr. Garner's going to explain what this means, and he's actually quite an expert in this area. So maybe, first off, Dr. Garner, could you talk to us a little about what is homochirality and why is it important to origin of life researchers?
Okay. Well, molecules are a lot like any other objects. If they're very, very simple shapes, they can only exist in one form, like a baseball. There's not two kinds of baseballs or two kinds of baseball bats. But as objects get more complicated, there can suddenly be two forms that are sort of the same and sort of not. It's like baseball gloves. There's right-handed and left-handed suddenly, or automobiles. In America, the steering wheel's on the left. In Britain, the steering wheel's on the right. And you really don't want to mix the two. Now, they're both cars. You can both drive them. You can drive both of them on the roads and stuff, but they're not quite the same, are they? And molecules are exactly that way. Once they reach a certain level of complexity, they can exist in two forms, which in a lot of ways are identical. And in fact, they have identical properties in most cases. But where they differ a lot is in living systems, or in other systems that are also candid like they are. That we call this chirality in organic chemistry. It means the ability to exist in two forms that are not quite the same. Non-superimposable mirror images is the definition. And the reason that matters in living things is that the molecules in living systems, the sugars, the amino acids and proteins, primarily those, are all of one mirror image. In other words, they're all either right-handed or left-handed. And you can't have any of the other ones or it causes a lot major problems.
Is this an area where you have done research or where you have some sort of special expertise?
Yes, I've worked in chirality, chiral chemistry, for probably 25 or 30 years. Mainly my research involves trying to come up with new ways to make single mirror images, in other words, one hand or the other, without contamination of the opposite one, or analyze these things, because they're not always that easy to analyze, either to figure out what kind of ratios you have of the two different forms.
So why is this issue so important to origin of life researchers? I mean, we've heard for many years people saying that they're trying to solve the problem of the origin of homochirality. Why is this question so important to people studying the origin of life?
Yeah, origin of life is beset with many, many, many problems. One, you have to come up with the molecules that are what are called the building blocks. And of course, Miller-Urey chemistry does that to some extent, although depending what conditions you allow, you know, that reaction may or may not be successful. As I understand it, Miller-Urey has produced about half or so of the amino acids that occur in living systems. And the next problem you have is joining them together. The next problem you have is joining them in a particular order, which is critical. But even if all of that wasn't a problem, you need to understand that any one amino acid can exist in two forms, right and left-handed. And if you join these, and Miller-Urey experiments make these in 50-50 ratios, or very nearly 50-50. There has been a little bit of research here and there that you get slight variations in the 50-50 ratio, but nothing significant. If you go to join the wrong mirror image into a protein, for example, it causes major problems. I mean, you're out of the game immediately. You can't do that.
So what you're saying, Dr. Garner, is that basically if you're trying to construct a protein and you have certain amino acids that are the wrong handedness, or they are, you know, basically they're right-handed instead of left-handed, then that protein will not function properly and the organism obviously will have great problems. Is that basically what you're saying? You can't have any of these wrong-handed amino acids?
Yes, Casey, that's absolutely right. It turns out in nature, all of the amino acids, or very nearly all of them, are left-handed, it turns out. And if you try to make a protein containing even one out of hundreds of amino acids that's a right-handed amino acid, it's going to mess the shape of that protein up and the function of that protein badly. I don't say that it would be absolutely inactive in all cases. It depends what amino acid and where it's placed and some things like that. But the chances are major serious problems with even just one out of many being the wrong mirror image. There are a few right-handed amino acids out there. Occasionally there's a bacteria that will use a right-handed amino acid as a way to kind of protect itself, because it turns out other living systems don't recognize right-handed. They only recognize left-handed. And so there will be a very, very, very rare examples of right-handed ones out there.
And when you say that only left-handed amino acids exist in nature, what you really are saying is that they only exist, or at least to almost the entire extent, in biology. Because in nature, you will get basically equal ratios of left-handed and right-handed amino acids under normal chemistry, but for some reason, life only produces and uses left-handed amino acids. And so, I mean, my understanding of the situation is that the big problem facing Origin of Life's researchers is how do we account for via inorganic, blind chemical processes the origin of mixtures of purely left-handed or even just purely right-handed, one or the other, purely one of the two hands of amino acids. What is the chemistry behind that? Have I stated the question basically correct there?
Yes, that's right. It turns out that you could imagine that if you started with some mixture, because almost every known reaction produces a 50-50 mixture, or very nearly 50-50 mixture of amino acids. Now, this assumes you get all the amino acids you need. Miller Urey only comes up with about half or so of what you need, but let's assume that's not an issue. It turns out even chemists could not build a protein in the laboratory from a 50-50 mixture of amino acids without first separating the two mirror images from each other. A chemist has to start with all left-handed. If you gave a chemist a 50-50 mixture and told them they had to build a protein of any significant length, it would be absolutely impossible to purify and get out the thing you want in any sort of usable form. It's never been done, and it never will be done, because you'd get so many different stereoisomers that would be essentially inseparable, inactive, and cause all sorts of other problems. The numbers are astronomical, actually. I don't have them in front of me, but if you were to take, say, even a 50 amino acid protein and very randomly right and left-handed amino acids, the numbers are just astronomical, you know, 10 to the 20th or some huge number like that.
That makes a lot of sense. So have Origin of Life researchers, in your opinion, been able to come up with a good explanation for the origin of homochirality via natural processes that might have mimicked the kind of processes that were perhaps on the early Earth or in some meteorite or some other natural conditions? Have they been able to explain how you can get mixtures of just left-handed or just right-handed amino acids?
Not very effectively, and the basic answer would be no there. There have been a few indications, hints of different ways to get not quite 50-50. For example, there's a famous meteorite, the Murchison meteorite, that some of the amino acids found in there are not quite 50-50. There'll be numbers like, you know, 52-48 or some things like that, slightly different. And the thought there is that amino acids can form in interstellar space to some extent. Again, you don't get all the amino acids. And light from certain stars can be circularly polarized and possibly destroy one of the mirror images more than the other, which leads to a little bit more of one than another. But in terms of laboratory science, so in terms of basically natural abiotic processes, no, there's been nothing, I'd say, effective or even plausible for making anything but very, very close to 50-50 mixtures. In terms of laboratory studies, there have been a few indications of, there are a few reactions that will tend to give you much more of one mirror image than another, starting from what would be normal abiotic conditions. Basically, I can only think of one reaction of that type that's even known in all of chemistry. Much has been made of this. Now, what you're going to find in general, if you look into Origin of Life chemistry, is there's an incredible tendency to grasp at straws. Origin of Life researchers will often grab the smallest encouraging result and trumpet it as, you know, a major breakthrough. Miller Urey being, you know, example of that. You know, they were able to make quite a few amino acids, not all of them. They're all racemic. The main product of Miller-Urey is tar. And yet, that's supposed to be like the biggest breakthrough in Origin of Life chemistry. And it probably represents the biggest breakthrough, even though it was over 50 years ago.
So, I mean, it's really like what we're dealing with. Somebody once produced a fully bound and perfectly written book. And so they've been able to produce, you know, basically a few letters. But you still haven't been able to explain how the letters end up on pages in the form of words, how then the words get strung together into the right orders and paragraphs, and then how all of that ends up, you know, on paper that's bound in a book, and then, you know, and then you get to read the book. I mean, we're so far from explaining it. But, I mean, of course, it's interesting to hear about this, and at this point, they're still stuck trying to figure out how you can get left-handed or right-handed amino acids, so then you can somehow account for how you can construct proteins, which can then somehow form an information-carrying molecule, which, of course, would have to be ordered in the right order, and there's no known mechanism for ordering the information in the right order, and then there's all kinds of other problems you would face from the harsh abiotic conditions that aren't very friendly to this kind of organic chemistry sticking around for very long. So, I mean, I don't need to go on and on about the problems, and I know you are very familiar with this. The very fact that we're having this conversation shows me just how far down the chain the Origin of Life researchers are towards even coming close to an explanation for how it all got started. But this is still interesting, and people talk about it. And I guess my question for you would be, these laboratory experiments where they do have a bias towards one hand or the other of amino acids, do these represent the kind of reactions that might actually take place in natural conditions on the early Earth or on a meteorite or something like that?
Absolutely not. They do try to do some of these with amino acids to make them relevant to Origin of Life, because that's usually where this search for homochirality is of significance, and published, you know, in Origin of Life journals and things like that. But most of, in fact, maybe without exception, these experiments are so far removed from anything that can occur in nature that they have no relevance. You know, they're like demonstration projects to demonstrate a principle, but you're demonstrating under conditions that have no relation to anything that can occur naturally in most cases.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Dr. Garner. This has been very enlightening to learn about Origin of Life research and homochirality from someone who really has a lot of expertise in this issue. So we really thank you for sharing your expertise with us today.
Oh, thank you, Casey.
Well, it's been a lot of fun. This is Casey Luskin. Stay tuned on the Idea of the Future podcast. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2008. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.